All right, once again, here you are, Drinks with Friends. Your hosts are here, Madison Ray.
And that guy, Ryan. Happy Sunday, everybody.
And happy Pride, Capital Pride weekend, I will specify here in Des Moines. The parade is today, all the shenanigans, actually all week. There's actually been some kind of dope shit that's been going on as far as, like, there's the queer abstraction display that went up in the Art Center this month. It's the first of its kind in the nation.
That's dope.
So, like, yo, Iowa, stay lit. You know, like, we on the forefront, like, doing some really cool shit. Like, this is the first year that they've been a week-long schedule of events. You know, doing things like 5Ks and having these speakers and doing all this stuff. Obviously, all the presidential candidates are out here shaking hands and,
of course,
wearing rainbow flags and whatever else.
Right. Pandering.
Yeah. Also known as pandering.
Yeah.
We also have a special guest here with us today. Go ahead.
Hey, speak. Mr. Andre Davis.
The one and only.
Yeah. Welcome. This is your first time on... Well,
No. He's hung out before.
You are on a group. This is your first solo time on the show.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to promote before we get into the deep water?
Shout out St. Louis, Midwest shit. Let's go.
Of course, gotta, you know, shout out to our sponsors.
Yeah.
Andro DSM, Power Up.
And Susie Sweet Treats, Secret Ingredients Love, Not Cocaine. Special shout out to Susie right now. She's actually working with one of our other great friends of the show, Pyramid Theater.
That's right.
Doing like props for their show that's currently out.
Yep.
So yeah, shout out to both of them.
They actually have two shows running concurrently.
Right.
Out of the Stoner Theater in the Civic Center.
Yep.
Which is dope. They actually went head to head with the Star Wars concert the last couple nights. But, you know, they still stand.
That's right.
Also, Madison Ray and the Finesse got booked for Heartland Youth Pride in Omaha at the end of the month. So if you're in the area or you're feeling like hitting the road, come and hang out with us. Like, it's gonna be lit. This is actually my first arena show. I'm real excited for this.
Dope.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a 20 minute spot, but like, that's 20 minutes in an arena.
Yeah.
You know, full of a bunch of gay kids. I'm here for it. Like, it's gonna be great.
It's gonna be a party.
So that all being said, all that out of the way, let's talk about some things. Let's talk about some stuff. So, okay, May 31st, this series dropped on Netflix. When They See Us. A mini-series. It's a four-part mini-series by Ava DuVernay. She is famously the director of Selma. And it recounts the events of the case and then fallout of Central Park Five in 1989 when...
Exonerated Five.
The Exonerated Five. Bruh, facts. When five young black and Latino boys were accused of raping a jogger in Central Park. I must just leave it there.
he said it was exonerated.
Yo, okay. So, should we talk about the case or the series first? Like, how you want to unpack this, you guys?
Well, I mean, like I said earlier this week, I didn't watch the series.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's talk about the case.
Let's talk about the case.
So, yeah, as we said, it's basically these five boys who were accused and then dragged through court. And there's a big show put on, and media got into it, the newspapers, and our current president taking out a full-page ad and, like, calling for the heads of these boys.
A reinstatement of the death penalty in this case specifically.
Yeah.
But also, like, so... when I was in college, I did some psychology studies, and this is actually one of the things we talked about, like, actually from Jump, which is kind of weird in retrospect. But it was the book that we had to read was about what they, of course, academically called wilding, right? Wilding.
With a D.
Yeah, wilding in America. And it was a whole, like, it was talking about some different case studies, but this was kind of the centerpiece of this conversation, and it's interesting how academia would strip the humanity of brown people and talk about us like animals, like livestock that have broken out of our cages.
It's because we're three-fifths of a human being.
Of wilding out in public, right? Yeah.
Or even just taking our slang out of context.
And that's, like, that's the point I was about to make, yes.
It's like, if you... Everybody who's within the culture knows. I'm like, yo, homie out there wilding. Like, it's just awesome. Like, you tripping. Like, you know what I mean?
Out of character.
You know, and that could be anything. Like, my homie sit there and drop his juice or something. Right. I'm like, but you wild. Right?
Good, bro?
Yo, Nick Cannon has made his empire on a TV series called
Wild Out.
Yeah.
Which just is literally nothing jokes. But just a bunch of comedians sitting on stage laughing.
Making up songs. Like, fake pickup lines. Like,
you know. That's just a classic.
I think it's just like, let's call it what it is.
My understanding of the facts is that, you know, a bunch of kids go out to the park one night, they wild out.
All these kids are,
you know what I'm saying? Kids doing things, you know.
Regular kid shit.
And concurrently, then there was a rape that occurred. And when the cops showed up, it was about trying to pin that crime on these kids.
No.
And so really what it was this kind of like wild goose chase about like how many of these young black boys can we find that were there and figure out which ones did it.
Yeah. Which ones we can pin it on.
It's really what it comes to. Yeah. So, you know, here's the thing is like, and this is, I think, to tie some different pieces together, like what some of these Netflix series have done is kind of shown some of what goes on in these police investigations and a lot of these false accusations, or at least something that has like at least makes you look twice at a case, because what happens and it comes up a lot in a lot of different communities is that there's a narrative and they're trying to make the facts fit the narrative as opposed to letting the facts tell you the story of what happened. Because you get these independent investigators that will find all this stuff that these police somehow missed with all of these, you know, all this manpower, all this labor trying to like figure it out. Like, you missed this detail and you missed this thing. Your imagination couldn't quite grasp the idea that, you know, maybe there are some more players in or some things that aren't quite fitting. No. This is the story that we're telling, and we need to find the facts that make support this story it. Believable.
Right. And that's the thing that sucks. Like, I'm in law school right now, and that's the part of the job. The job is, in even watching the series, the prosecuting attorney, she's in that space of like, okay, we obviously know that this don't really make sense. Like, you know what I'm saying, type shit. And the homicide lady, she like, the fuck about none of that. Yeah. Like, do the fuck.
We know what
happened.
We know
shit.
Where we started. Link them.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, do your fucking job, type shit. And then, like, her being an attorney is like, fuck.
Like, right.
I guess I gotta go be an attorney, type shit. So,
right. I gotta go do my job.
I gotta go sit in here and essentially try to create this narrative based off these facts that I know really don't support this narrative. But if I don't do it, then I'm a terrible attorney, and unfortunately how our legal system is set up, you're a terrible attorney, you're not going to work.
Right.
Like, that's just what it is.
Well, especially if you work for the state.
You would never work again if you sit there and like fuck up, especially a huge case like that. She would have fucked up a huge case like that. She would have never worked as an attorney again.
Well, it's also politics. The notion of like, so it's not just like, so in any of these cases, it's not just the attorney, the DA, whatever, that's on the line. It's like the whole system that's backing that, you know, like
I think that comes from
mayors and governors and senators and all these things.
It comes from a numbers game. Like, it all comes from a numbers game where these people have to have a certain case completion. They are just like, police have to have a certain arrest quota and things like that. Money that you're bringing in that goes up the line. Like, as you go farther and farther up the line to where all of a sudden it's like, oh, my county's doing, my city's doing really well, my county's doing really well, my state's doing really well, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you go on up the ladder and people become a commodity. Like,
or like, is it an election year?
Right.
You know, shit like that. I mean, like, other things that have nothing to do with it, with a case are constantly playing factors in what's going on. So, long story short, to keep this, you know, keep the facts moving, the five boys were found guilty of various charges and served time in different ways at different places. They were not all sent to the same place. They were all not given the same level of punishment, but all were punished for this crime. They were put into the prison system, which changes people, you know.
Especially if you're convicted of rape. Like, anybody who has like any type of like knowledge about like prison culture in general, there's like really like two crimes, like if you walk into prison with them, like the people that are going to try to fuck you up because they think you're the lowest of the low.
Yeah.
And that's usually you rapists or like child molesters.
Yeah.
So like if you
walk into, particularly,
if you fit into any of those categories, like in prison culture,
as soon as you walk in,
as soon as you come in through the cell door, they like, oh, so thank you for giving us, like, you know, we're gonna give the society justice by like getting rid of this scum for you type shit.
I've dealt with some real sketchy people in my life, of lots of different colors and backgrounds, and the one thing I can say, which is like strangely comforting, is that there is a code of ethics even amongst
honor amongst thieves.
Yeah,
if you will.
Really, for real. Like
don't touch
like
kids.
There are people who are out here doing some serious crimes, like committing serious felonies. They're like, we're not going to talk to your mama,
but we're not going to touch the
kids. No, we'll literally go kill your mother. But then, like, oh, you out here touching the kids?
She's grown and she was talking shit. This little homie was innocent.
Fuck her, but like,
right.
You out here touching kids? Don't help.
Yo, like, real quick story sidebar on some shit like this. Like, so I was at this bar on New Year's Eve. And there was a girl who I think might have been drugged, because like we were talking and she seemed fine, and then suddenly she wasn't fine. You know, like she all of a sudden couldn't stand up, and like, so was she overserved? Did she go too hard in the paint, or did somebody slip her a little something? Because she was like, just cute girl. You know what I'm saying? Probably like, you know, top three in the bar. So you know that puts a target on people's back. You know, like when that cute one walks in, all of a sudden those predators start making their moves, right? So like, it's late, like shit's closing down, and this old cowboy motherfucker comes running up to me, like he's like, "There's a girl on the smoking patio that's like she can't even stand up." Da 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 da. So like, obviously that protective instinct of mine kicked in. I was like, and this is that January that it was like -25 outside. Yo, my dudes, I ran outside with no coat, and I said, so I want to check on this girl. Like, if she can't stand up, and like y'all is gonna leave her out there, like what's up? And this dude had her like pinned in the corner, like holding her up. But like,
not really hugging.
But what, like with his crotch, you know what I'm saying? Like, like, you know what I mean? Like, you ain't helping right now. So like, I stepped in and I was like, "Is there a problem here?" And of course, that instantly made dude back up. Oh no, she's drunk. She can't even. Da, 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 da. Like, I was like, "All right, cool. Give her to me. I'm gonna take her inside. A, it's cold. A, she can't even stand. Like, give me that young lady." I carried her inside. And of course, like with that whole little mob of people that were out there, like witnessing but not doing shit, followed me in. You know, like we all mobbed back into the bar or whatever. And like, I'm trying to take care of business and make sure this girl is okay. I noticed that this dude that was like trying to be so helpful, like is now trying to sneak out the back, like make a quiet exit. And I saw all these hard ass biker dudes just like suddenly just get up and also walk out.
Yeah.
Right? Like I just saw like six rough ass dudes just suddenly just like peacefully and quietly just get up from their tables, leave their drinks, and then just also conveniently feel the need that it's time to also go. Like just to wrap this up, like somebody had come back in and was like, "Oh, don't worry, it's taken care of." And I was like,
"You've never seen the cowboy again."
That's where this conversation stops. Because I don't need to know any more details. Like, you know what?
That's not my business.
My name is Paul Espignon. But that was exactly that thing. I was like, these dudes that I actually had a little static with, because like I'm very different from that culture, like we're all of a sudden like we're on the same team, and like they got a code of ethics that they're gonna handle some business, like, and they gotta you know, handle some shit right now. Like, we gonna take care of this dude because we know he's wrong. We know that, you know. And so it's that kind of same thing with that prison culture. Someone comes in with that brand on them, like they're gonna get handled. They're gonna get dealt with.
And then, but some of that, but we can't also like take it away, like the race part of it as well, because some of that also is, it was a white woman, a blonde white woman, who was like particularly wealthy in some kind of capacity.
Yeah.
So then a lot of the...
And the attack was brutal.
And it was brutal. Yeah. It was like, I think she got hit over the head.
Lost a lot of blood.
Like,
I mean, she lost her memory.
Like a majority of the blood.
So we're talking brain trauma.
I think they
say
like 3/4. Like, it was like, they were for certain that she was going to die.
Right.
Like, that's why they called it like the homicide team. They was like, she's dead. She's not going to survive. So like, we need to start getting this homicide squad together. So it was a miracle that she survived. But a lot of the times, at least like through the interviews I've watched of the Exonerated Five, a lot of their attackers were people from the Aryan Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. So like, oh, like you are here attacking white women.
Not today, watch.
So it was like also those. So on one end, it is like kind of a code of ethic type of thing, but then on the other end, it's like also underlying part of that is like racism.
I think that code of ethics thing, the racism thing, the code of ethics is what stopped maybe some of the protection from their own in the yard, because it's like, nah, bro, like the fact that you did this is still fucked up. You got no protection here. We're not going to stop them from doing whatever they're going to do to you.
We leave you out here with that one.
Yeah.
So the thing is, what this then starts to unravel is a series of some of the just gross injustices happening to these kids.
Yeah.
Children. In these situations. Yes, we are talking about children in these situations where they are attacked and violated. All of the emotional stress and trauma that goes with that. And then once you're out, you're not really out, right. You know, like you're still branded. You're still, you know, like you're that one.
You're dealing with that trauma for the rest of your life.
Right. It never goes away.
No.
I don't care how big that settlement check that they got is. Like, that doesn't really fix.
Relatively speaking, $39.1 million is not that much money.
Five ways?
Mm.
Yeah.
See, and it didn't go five ways evenly. It was based off the amount of time that they served.
Right.
And I think one of the points that they had pointed out was like, our families weren't able to get like certain jobs and shit because of the stigmas. They're like, oh, you're the mother of the rapist or shit, the New York raper or whatever. Blah, blah. So it was like, they were like, why are they not compensated for like, the struggle y'all put us, like y'all put them through as well.
Sure.
Like, New York itself, like all contributed to the, not only the lives of these men being altered, but also their families. Yeah.
Well, actually, that brings a really interesting point. I want to kind of unpack a little bit if you're willing to have the idea. This notion of generational trauma, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't just happen to you singularly. You are not in a vacuum, and it's not this kind of anomaly of this thing that just you go through. It is what happens to your family and to your friends, to your children, to your parents, and how that trauma will reverberate through your family line or through your community for some time. And then think about how many of us go through that.
All of us who are minority go through that in an extent, just because that's how that generational trauma is how we're taught to carry ourselves throughout the world. Like, generational trauma is in and of itself, my mom and my grandmother and my father telling me that be careful how you act because you'll be labeled this certain way and then this can happen to you because of it. And then it's even carried on, because I told my son the same when I get an email from school, like, oh, Riley got in an argument with somebody, he was angry about this, like, hey bro, you gotta check your emotions because you can't be labeled as the angry brown kid going through life, like, because then that's gonna set you up for this, you know what I mean? So it's a cycle, man. It just keeps on going.
No, I feel you. I think I've recognized generational trauma. I think the other end of it, at least the cutoff point for me, is when, because I was raised in a household where it's like, people before you have been through a lot. We have moved it as far forward as we can. Now it's your job to move it further.
Take the next step.
And I think the thing that the cutoff I have to use for generational trauma is when people try to use almost like generational exhaustion type shit. Like, I don't want to. I'm sick of trying to fight racism because we've been through so much. Yeah. It's like, huh?
So like, you want more people to continue going?
So you're not gonna.
So you're like, okay with it?
Because if you sit there and tell me that like the torch I have to carry in fighting racism is talking to people, having conversations about microaggressions and shit, you feel me? But like Fred Hampton, right? You know, like even before, like your ancestors literally are fighting racism with nothing but their hands in front of them, facing guns.
Yeah.
Like that's their fight against racism. Yeah. And my fight against racism, thanks to their sacrifice, is talking to people. Mm. But I can't do that because we are tired. Stop. Like if you don't want to pay that kind of respect to the ancestors, then like that's you. That's on you. But I'm not about to sit there and be like, yo. this talking shit difficult. which isn't to say that it's easy. It's an easy task, but just in perspective.
Like the conversations may not be easy, but having the conversations is the simplest thing you can do.
I would much rather have this end of the fight than have their end.
Like, I know this is really cliche, but like you think about like, I always think about like Harriet Tubman specifically, like the notion of like what that lady did, like never disrespect a black woman in your fucking life, like you know what I mean, like. Yeah. You talk about the fighters, the ones that are really out there, like doing that work and doing that thing, like.
But even how deep the connections are, like fam, like people like. For some reason, people just completely skip over Reconstruction. So, like, after slavery is abolished, quote-unquote, there are literally millions of people in the country who are like, yo, I have a wife, I have children, I have a husband. Where are they? Right. Like, I'm in Texas. I heard they're in Alabama. Alabama's east. I'm just going to go east. That's east. And literally will walk states.
Yeah.
Just because they heard, that their family is in this direction, bro. Like, the connection is deep. The fight has always been deep. Like, come on, G. Like, this isn't shallow at all. Mm-hmm. So to like to come to this space now, when I look at like issues, bring it back a little bit. You know what I'm saying? To see how people use activism when we hear about stories about the Exonerated Five, and they're like, yo, my activism is going to be sharing Facebook memes. And then I've shared enough Facebook memes, so like, I need. I've been
my conscience is clear.
You know what I mean,
right.
Type shit.
I've done my work. Right. Like, I'm so tired.
I'm winning the activist Olympics
right
now.
I keep
like,
clicking that share button, and it's just like my thumb hurts. You know what I mean?
Like, man,
I think I got arthritis from all this sharing.
Real talk, and they got the nerve to be like, I'm cutting people off because I'm sick of y'all type shit. But what are you doing though?
Yeah,
like, come on.
So you're gonna isolate yourself further and continue living that bubble? Yeah,
just to convince yourself of some work that you've done type shit. Like, nah, bro.
Mm.
That's deep.
Yo, that's that's amazing. Like, yo, retweet that
for
right,
real.
Right there. Right. Speaking of sharing memes, right?
Like Twitter, do your thing.
Right. So that being said, this series in a dramatized fashion. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. You know what I mean? I saw what it was about. I read the synopsis. I knew who was involved. I'm already, like, so with all of that, I'm like, yeah, this is something I'm definitely, like, even Netflix knew, like, hey, yo, this is some shit you gonna like. I'm like, I know. I'm here for it. Hit play. And, you know, it's four episodes. I can knock this out in an afternoon. Biggest mistake of that week. Because, like, bruh, I wasn't ready. It's a difficult piece of work to contend with and wrestle with and understand and experience, even though it's dramatized. But at the same time, it's also a beautiful piece of work. It's so well done. It's so well crafted. Dorne is a beast. Like she's like, actually there's a part of me, just a little sidebar, like I really wish I could have seen the Ava DuVernay Black Panther movie. Like, she was actually the original director they wanted for that movie, but they, Disney and she could not come to terms, so they moved it to Cooper. Anyway.
After seeing A Wrinkle in Time, I don't think that was a bad decision, but that's totally not.
That's a whole other thing. That's a whole other thing. But I'm just saying, but seeing what I had seen and her understanding of how to tell that story and even go to the difficult places is necessary, but at the same time, there is the thing of the exploitation of black trauma. Like, so Andre and I have been working with each other now for almost a year, maybe more. And that was actually kind of the beginning of the conversation of when we were doing our work together, is how do we tell our stories? How do we represent ourselves? How do we do this work and share ourselves without the kind of trauma porn that people get to enjoy our suffering.
See, and that's,
you know, so it's not just the, oh, this is rough, let me tell you the struggle, but the people that are like, I love hearing about the struggle. We're not going to do shit about it.
Cry in front of me, black boy.
Yeah.
Show me what it's like to hurt. Show me what it's like to feel something. Like people become so like desensitized to feeling of like, yo, we spend all day on our fucking phones and all of this type of shit that we are so used to seeing trauma and pain, but we want to see it up close. Yeah. Show me, you know, go to the poetry spot and show me what it's like to like really hurt. So then I can sit there and see it and be like, oh, wow. That was amazing.
I can only imagine.
Right. And to say such positive things about such a hurt place.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to clap for that. Mm. Like, that's a weird ass place to be in. And I think that was the thing that made it also difficult to watch for me as well, was the juxtaposition of like, this is a beautifully crafted piece of work, but also, fuck. I literally had to stop it a few times and like, talk myself down. It's like, listen, bro, like,
I was literally in tears by the end of it.
Every single episode, like, I cried. Every single episode. And I think most of it was because, like, my boy he'd been trying to give me hip to this joint called Bodily Resonance.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So it's like, the human brain is constantly checking in with its body. Like, what's the difference between, like, your body and your clothes? What's the difference between, like, your feet and the ground type shit? Right. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the difference between this being and this being?
Right.
And it's constantly doing that. But then bodily resonance can also be extended. And this is like what people see when they like watch movies and they're like feel embarrassed for the other character because they're like, because their brain is attaching their experience to what they're viewing type shit.
Sure.
Now we have to talk about, well, as a black person, how often have you seen yourself be killed? How often have you seen yourself be beat up? How often have you seen yourself, you know, be robbed? And like, that's already difficult as it is, right? To like see that happen to adults.
Yeah.
So then for the series, it was like, now watch the younger you, the boy in you.
What could have been? The innocent you, the purest version of you.
That literally just want to go out and have fun with your friends. Like the big nightmare that your parents warned you about this whole entire time, now you get to connect with that.
See, and that's where, that's the reason why I haven't watched it. And it's because for me, I'll tell you a story about Lil Ryan. Like, when it comes down to it, like, I, for a long time, have had a problem with viewing the trauma of people that look like me as entertainment. And my first memory of it would be when I went to, like, I'm the only kid, my mom used to work nights in the summer. Like, I would hang out with my mom and my grandma, right? And so we would go to movies and shit. And I remember us going to the movie theater out in West Des Moines, which is like a bar now. Seeing Serafina in the theaters. I don't know if y'all have ever seen Serafina.
I remember that movie.
So I believe it's basically it takes place in Sudan. It's like the and everything in Sudan. So I'm seeing like African people just dying, and like I was probably like 7, 8. It was probably like my son's age when that shit came out, and like I left the theater crying. Like I'm like, I had to go. Like I couldn't sit there and watch that. Like, so we left. Like no, let's get him out of here. Like clearly he wasn't quite ready for this. Like, you're a mature kid, but this wasn't it for you.
Not this one.
Yeah. And then going on and being like raised on like Spike Lee movies and shit, and then all of a sudden Bamboozled came out.
Yeah.
Like watching Bamboozled and seeing that, and then being a very well read child and having like an aunt who's a professor in African American studies and things like that, that would bring me like these different stories. And things like, oh, you like to read? Well, here's some heavy shit for you, right? Yeah. And so because of that, like being a well-read kid and actually reading about the issues and having my granddad who fought colorism and racism his whole life, being a light-skinned black man who was the first black foreman of the Des Moines Register, like in the printing press, like he was the one who was running shit, first black dude. While I also have to deal with black people being like, oh, you ain't got this because you're like light enough to pass, you know what I mean? Like, so shit like that. So like having being raised on that and reading about that and things, and then being... Also, having always been a visual person, I don't believe that our trauma needs to be visualized. At least not for me. Like, I know where it came from. I know what's happened to people that look like me. I don't need to see it. Like, and it's for things that I'm interested in, like, I'll go out and read about it. Like, even with all the shootings and everything like that, that have been now in the palm of everyone's hand, thanks to technology. Not that it's different, but now it's accessible. I don't watch it, like, just because, like, I don't need to see another black man gunned down for being black when every day of my life I'm doing the same shit. Like, I don't need to see what
it's not the the audacity. I can't believe this would happen to somebody. Like, we've been knowing and we've been telling you this story. We stayed in that lane saying, like, this is what happens to us in these situations. And while it's important to document that for the sake of a case and proving a point and doing that thing, the notion of sharing it amongst ourselves, like, it's crushing.
Right. Bro. Like, I don't need to hurt you further by showing you this.
Right. Right.
It's not doing anything to better your position in the world. It's not doing anything to better your mindset. It's not doing anything to heal you from the constant shit that we have to go through.
Right.
And we just have to survive through
it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, like, so for me, that's where I have the disconnect. And it's the same thing for, like, slavery movies. I can't do it. Like, I know what happened to our people. I know about the transatlantic slave trade. I know how people were separated and how people had to do all this. I don't need it visualized for me because I know.
Again.
Right.
Mind you.
Right. Like, I already sat through public education where it was painted with this, like, kind of these rose-colored glasses. Then I got to go through and had things provided to me by black people. Like, here's what they told you. Here's how we tell it.
Yeah, yeah.
You come in the middle because, I mean, of course, there's two sides to every story or whatever. But I don't need it visualized, especially 9 times out of 10, painted from the people who don't have to deal with it or didn't have to deal with it, don't look like it.
Mm.
Like, you can't tell me shit about me.
Yeah.
That I didn't see.
Right.
And,
And so for
this story, and two, I was telling Andre before we started, being in an interracial relationship, it's hard for me to watch you when black people are attacked and not carry that over into my real life. Like, my significant other didn't do anything to me. She's a phenomenal mother. She's a great partner. We have had really deep, in-depth conversations about the experiences that I've had, the experience that our son will likely have, and things like that. I've been able to educate her on a lot of things. And going back to what you were talking about with resonance, it kind of goes down to the same conversations I had with her about conditioning. Like, just as we have to watch ourselves go through trauma, you're conditioned to think of us as less than human because this is what you've seen for your entire life. Like, when we first got together, you didn't know shit about me. I could have been just another black dude who was out here selling dope, gangbanging, this, that, and the other.
Which was almost the expectation, which then also then gets sexualized and
right,
and
it's like,
fetishized.
Oh, a little bit of danger, that bad boy, really, and I'm a fucking nerd. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. I read books.
Thank you, yeah. Like, I draw comic book characters. I like, chill, dude.
I went to church.
That's a different generational trauma, right?
I went to his church.
Yeah, I don't do that anymore.
I also think the difficult part of that also is, like, there was such a demand for it to be shared and, like, seen because of the amount of pushback from the non-believers.
Yeah.
Of, like, is it really that
happen.
Bad?
Right. Yeah.
Or it's like, is it? Like, y'all keep on saying, like, it's like, well, this happened type shit. But then, like, once you see it, it's like, you cannot. But that's the thing that makes it even difficult now is even people see it.
Yeah.
They're still like, denied.
That's the problem with taking it and turning it into entertainment, because then people think it's sensationalized like entertainment. It's like, oh, it really couldn't have been that bad. They had to do this in order to get the rage, to get the buzz, to get people talking about it. Like,
yeah.
No, nigga, people died. People continue to die. People are
right.
out there,
like,
struggling.
The shit that like gets me so high is like, so a video gets shared or a story gets shared about, you know, a black motorist gets gunned down by the cops because his tire was flat or whatever. And then there's always that person that wants to slide through and be like,
Why didn't we just listen?
We didn't see the rest of the tape.
Yeah. What happened before this?
Yeah.
What led to this?
Yeah, like,
what did you say?
We're only getting half the story. If you'd have complied, it would have been it's like that narrative, because they see it as entertainment.
Yeah.
Even though you're getting a direct feed of a situation that happened, this is a tough one. So when Philando Castile died, I actually saw that happening live. Like, for whatever reason, I had the connections, enough connections, that it had
been shared enough.
It popped up in my thing as it was actually happening. And so, like, here's this thing, and, you know, you get curious, you're scrolling, and you're like, what is this? I don't even know who these people are, what's going on? And as I'm watching this man bleeding to death, and this woman is somehow calmly pleading with child in the backseat, guns drawn, all that, like the fact of the matter that there are people that will sort of step up and defend, or at least want to see that as a form of entertainment because of the delivery method, It's exactly that thing of the ability to now to disconnect themselves from the humanity of the people involved, because it's them over there on my phone, on my TV. It's not that real.
Or even, it's even real enough, it's to the point where I've happening. Seen this so many times that now it's just like, oh, another one.
And right. And desensitization, yeah, and as you said, conditioning and programming.
The selfishness of people who don't share that empathy. Because, I mean, how many times do you also hear the people, like, lived in the town, like, oh, great, there's going to be another protest. That's going to add 40 minutes to my commute to work. Now I got to go. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So people are able to... I feel like sharing this shit constantly strips people of their empathy. Mm. At least visually. Because, like, you see anything enough times, you're just going to be like, oh.
It becomes the new normal. Yeah.
So
I think also, like, giving people direction. Some people may say I'm not as empathetic, but I think I'm just one of those people who's like, if I'm going to use my empathy, I have to direct it. Mm. So, like, if I'm going to protest, I'm protesting because there's a particular goal I think we have to hit. Mm. And the only way for us to even get to the door to start moving that goal forward is to start with the protest. Mm. But if I'm just about to be like, hey, we about to lay on the ground because we just want to let people know that we hurt, yeah. I'm like, nah, fam, I need my empathy don't work like that.
I don't do that kind of shit, and I think
that's what some people is like, yo, why are you doing this? No. And if they don't have a good reason, like, well, what's going to happen after the protest, they're like, look, but I don't want to sit there and look at that shit. No. And I think just by throwing the legal end as well, I think the way our legal system is set up, where if I am an officer and I draw my weapon, I have to defend. Like, if that person tries to sue me or whatever, I have to defend why I drew my weapon type mm-hmm. shit. So it's really one of those situations where you either have to reasonably believe that you were in danger first.
Yeah.
Like, or, like, you know, actually were in danger type shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So then it's one of those situations where, like, if you don't empty the whole clip, or if you don't, like, you know what I'm saying, fire somebody in a fatal space type shit, it's like, why do, like, if the police officers to go walk around like, yo, I shot him in the leg type shit, yeah. Then the it's argument,
like, well, why can you use a taser?
Because yeah, exactly. You don't get to court, nigga, like, well, then you didn't reasonably believe you were in danger in the first place enough to even have to shoot this person if you shot them in the leg type shit. So then it puts him in a position where it's like, so when I pull out this gun, I need to kill whoever it is I'm pulling this gun out on.
Looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
So how's it all going to play out? I actually now have to shoot to kill because I've drawn my weapon, which is insane.
Yeah.
Because those rules don't even apply in war zones, bro. Right. Like,
it's bananas that people in active military conflict zones have much stricter rules of engagement than somebody trying to stop you at for a traffic stop.
Right? I got I know motherfuckers have been in firefights, like, we gotta follow the rules here, you guys.
You gotta wait for something. Even if you do feel it, they gotta raise their hands to a certain level. Da 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 da. It's like, oh,
there's protocol.
No, he called
right?
me a pig, so I shot him because, you know, if he could say those mean words, who knows what he's capable of next.
He said it in such a threatening way.
Or if he could beat my ass, that means I gotta exactly. kill him now. Like, nah, bro, get the fuck out of here.
For real.
And that's the thing that makes it so difficult, since the law is written in a way it says reasonably afraid. Mm-hmm. And the concept of reasonableness mm-hmm. is so different. And if you sit there and put a jury of most likely 12 white people,
yeah.
and like, yo, you see a big black dude running towards you, would you be afraid?
And
would you
reasonably fear for your life?
That's why I lock my doors.
That you've been seeing. Shit, you know?
Shit, that's why I cross the street when I see the mark, like, yeah. you know, type shit.
I've been conditioned to believe that they're all out to get me, or maybe not out to get me, but will stop at nothing to get over. Get over in their
well, better safe than sorry. Right. You understand? I mean, Jesus crackers, man.
That's though, because nobody wants to be able to, like, use their own fucking discernment. Like, look, bro, if you sit down and talk to some fucking people, you'll fuck around and be like, oh, not as scary as I fucking thought. Mm. Like, no shit, bro. Like, my homeboy, he's a darker skinned guy. And he doesn't like conflict at all.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not him. Like,
yeah.
He like, nah, bro, I'm chill type shit. And then me being the light-skinned guy, you know what I'm saying, growing up St. Louis, and they're like, oh, well, you soft and you light-skinned type shit, so I have to engage in certain type of sure. conflict type shit. So then it's like, so the assumption is, off jump, is like, all right, I could beat up a little light-skinned, but the dark-skinned homie, I'm going to leave him alone type shit. But it's literally the exact opposite type shit.
Which, again, goes back to colorism. Even right. amongst our own community, because
you darker, you scarier.
Right.
Yeah. Even amongst our own people, you darker, you scarier.
Yeah.
Right.
Isn't that fucked up?
It is.
Yo, But also, what's really fascinating is, you know, so this is something that I've talked about a lot in personal conversations, is this the court of public opinion.
Yep.
So with a series like this, now people are like, got these receipts and are now wanting to drag, you know, the prosecutors and the officers involved, and basically everyone who set these boys up, like, because it's based on something real and true.
Did you see that the victim is actually defending the cops and prosecutors and all this?
Nah, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I was reading an article about it yesterday where the victim was like, she was like, well, no, technically, it was bad enough where I have no recollection of the actual attack the night it happened, right? But these people were just trying to do their job, and they shouldn't be going through what they're going through now. But no, that's actually the problem in this whole thing, is that they were trying to skip over their job and just get the shit done. Like, just get it over with.
Right.
It's like the kid cleaning their room that just pushes all their shit in the closet. Like, oh, it's done.
It's under the bed.
But no, bro.
It's organized. It looks neat.
Yeah, but that's not
cleaning.
That's not how
shit.
It works.
No,
right.
Like, fucking room together. Especially looking at all the ways that they went out of their way to fucking, like, pin this on. I was watching an interview with, I think it was Raymond and Yusuf. Mm. And Yusuf had went down to the station with Corey Weiss.
Yeah.
And at a point in time, they had took Corey Weiss to the scene of the crime.
Mm.
And as one of the officer sisters tells Corey Weiss, oh, your shoe is untied. So as Corey Weiss goes down to tie his shoe, he bumps him and is trying to knock him onto the scene so that way he has some type of, like,
DNA
evidence
yeah.
on the fucking scene. Because there was they literally had already searched and found
nothing.
So it's like, your mindset is so predatory that you're literally sitting there like, how the fuck am I going to set up this young 14-year-old boy?
I need to put him at the scene. I will literally put him at the scene. I will take him to the thing. I will literally put him. So I have told white friends to check this out. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's important for like, while we have to create our safe spaces and find ways to process and therapize and all that kind of stuff, I also think it's important for others to understand some of these things. And I feel like sometimes the narrative moves us enough to go, oh shit, like, this shit's out here and it's real. But there's always that. There's still that thing where there's that fire back of like, well, I don't know if that's the whole story. It's like, but that is the whole story. You literally just saw the whole story. Like, all of the things are there. Yeah, but I feel like it's not enough to, like, convince me.
It's like you have an interesting crossroads where it's like, okay, because I mean, as I just said, for me personally, I don't need to see it.
Yeah.
Not saying it's not important for other people to see it, but then it's like, so how much do these people have to see before we can undo all the shit they've seen before and get to the point where we're seeing as human beings?
Right, so that's actually the question I wanted to pose based on that premise. Is like, how do you constructively have those conversations with people that are literally just given all the details in their lap and they're still like, I don't know, I have some questions.
I think that's the moment where the work starts.
Mm.
Like, earlier I'm talking about, like, my torch of fighting racism is the fucking conversation.
Yeah.
That's the conversation.
Right.
To be like, hey, you're a person who has questions. I might not have all the answers to your questions, but I have a way of approaching these type of situations that puts me in a place where I feel comfortable in my judgment of these situations. So if you sit in a space where you don't want to completely judge the situation because you might not feel X, Y, and Z, cool, let's work through this. What are the things that you absolutely do believe about the movie? They absolutely, it's a fact that they didn't have evidence. So that's a fact.
Yeah, right.
You know that's a fact. Like, that's not they was playing at it for the movie. Like, you can go online and literally go to the case and look at the fucking notes of like, bro, the evidence they had for the boys being there was not there.
Non-existent.
So if that's a fact, okay, cool, we got that, boom. So if you recognize that there was no fact supported that they were there, okay, cool. You have another fact that they had evidence of a sock that was on the scene filled with semen. Not five different traces of semen. One dude. And the DNA from that semen didn't match any of the five.
Right.
Yeah.
We know that for a fact.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's the part that's like, okay, so we recognize, because before we even get to talking about opinions, let's lay the facts on the ground first.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's the thing that gets difficult with these conversations, and we all get, like, emotional, we all get riled up. It's like, what the fuck you mean you didn't
Yeah.
The fuck you mean you don't understand type shit? So let's, before we go all the way there, because sometimes you do need that type of shit.
Yeah.
But before we get all the way there, let's line up the facts first. Like, if you can sit there and look at all these facts and then sit there and still say, oh yeah, that boy Corey Weiss needs to do 12 years in prison, most of which done in Rikers Island. Mm-hmm. You know, the rest of the boys need to do 6 to 7 years based off the facts. If you could sit in that place and comfortably say that, then we got a problem. Right. Then it's like you didn't come to me and ask some questions because you really want to understand you want to be on some shit. Okay,
yeah.
I can give you that too.
Right.
Type shit.
Right.
But anybody who's
code
like,
switch activate.
Oh, that's who you want.
Okay.
Got you.
Type shit. And I think that's where the discernment has to come from. Like, there are definitely people who have questions who are like, okay, questions is the starting point. All right. By the end of these questions, we should be seeing a certain kind of outcome.
Yeah. Or
if we get another,
even if we don't get that outcome, by the time you're done having this conversation with me with these questions, you should be to a point where you want to do some more of your own research. Like, you should at least be curious enough to be like, oh, well, maybe I do need to learn more about this before I pass judgment on it. Or maybe I really do need to, like, educate myself more. Because clearly, the shit they've been feeding me.
Right?
The shit they've been feeding me. Something right. You know what I mean?
I'm honestly at one of those places where I'm cool with people making judgments. I'm just one of those people who's like, no judgment should be final.
Fair.
Because there's always more information out there. There's always a space where, like, look, when I make a judgment, I recognize it's not my final judgment, but I make that judgment comfortable in this place of, like, whatever backlash I'm going to get from this judgment, I accept it type shit. I don't like the people who sit there and make judgments and then look at other people crazy when they start getting, like, serious backlash. Like, no, motherfucker, like, this is...
You're going to be confident. You also got to be confident in the fact that you can be wrong. Like, yeah, I'm saying this
like,
is how...
That is the most consistent thing
with
ever.
The humility... To walk it back when you're like, okay, I spoke too soon. Let me readjust with.
And that's
new information.
A personal thing.
There's
that's
new
personal
facts.
Growth. Because I mean, I'm quick to tell them because I love to argue. That shit is fun to me. Like, I'm same, down for same. A debate. You know what
my
mean?
Mother's an attorney. I get it.
You know,
live that
yeah,
life.
My mom's black. I get it. You know what I'm saying?
I like arguing with smart people. I'm not
yeah, exactly because
like,
yeah. I'm quick
if
to talk to my educated.
If it's a challenging joint, I'm like, cool. If you actually know how to put an argument together, because that's the other thing. People actually they use the word argument. But they really don't know how to argue.
Right.
Like, really what it happened is they have a conclusion, and they support it with another conclusion,
mm-hmm.
and then
like,
have that conclusion supported with another conclusion. And
you're
like, bro, no. That's not how this
I
works.
I can read headlines too, my friend.
Like, if we're trying to put together full thoughts and, like, cohesive ways of logic, bro, like, there needs to be some facts in here that create the fucking argument. If you have no facts to create the fucking conclusion...
Yo, class
what the
is in
fuck
session,
are you
y'all.
Talking right? to? Like, bro, like you just want to sit here and yell, and I'm not about to sit there and do that. Like, get the fuck out of here. Give me the smart motherfucker. Who the motherfucker you got your information from? I'm gonna talk to him.
Yo, that's actually why I don't talk to a lot of people because I've, like,
for
I.
What?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the notion if you're not actually bringing anything new and relevant to this topic, I actually have nothing to talk to you about. You're just going to talk your opinion, and that's not what I'm here to do. I'm not here to go through this thing of like what you feel like. Like, where's your expertise? Where's your logic? Like,
cite your sources.
Yeah,
bro,
if you can give me a structured, cohesive
thing. Analysis, bro. Like,
yeah,
because that's the disagreement, bro. It's like, look, it's the analysis of it, bro. If I'm sitting there telling you I got a disagreement with you type shit, and I really like think you put together a genuinely really good argument, I'm like, all right, bro, this is where I think your analysis maybe you look off. That's what I'm really trying to get into. Like, I don't want to get into the bullshit of like, yo, girl, I think the sky red. I'm not fucking play with you, bro. Like, fuck out my face.
Bye.
Bye. Like, you know what I mean? But if you go sit there, like, I think one of the, and this is a side note, but like, I had an argument with a young lady who was sitting there, who's really adamant about like this phrase of like, black men don't love black women. And I'm like, man, let's pull this back for a moment. You're talking about roughly 23 million people. Because I'm assuming she's just talking about black...
American
men.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we're talking about 23 million people, right? Research shows 85%, so a large majority of black men are married to black women.
Mm-hmm.
Large majority. So if you're sitting there telling me that... Now, don't get me wrong, this is still like smaller percentage than, you know what I'm saying, other races. That's cool. I get that. All right, fine. Still... very large percentage.
Yeah.
So if you're sitting there telling me that the facts of it actually support that when it comes down to it, black men, the women that they commit the rest of their lives to, the women that they start families with, the women that they essentially are trying to learn love, because not everybody, we're not perfect at loving, I get that, you may be fucking up too. But if the large majority, 85% is black women, stop with that. Like, you might accept that bullshit.
That's your opinion.
That shit sound cute. But when it comes to the facts, you gotta put a full, like, cohesive thought together that don't fucking make no sense.
Right.
Like,
if I have data that suggests literally the opposite of what you just said,
facts don't matter.
Right. Facts.
Your fact is an opinion. Well, oh, I have questions about the method in which that was. This poll put out there.
But don't even know the method. You hear me? They be like, well, you know, numbers be lying.
How?
I think it was Jay-Z that said.
The poet laureate, Sean Carter, once said.
This generation's shut the fuck up.
Like, come on, fam. Like, if we go sit there, and I think that's the other thing, is like, if we're going to really start to get into this space where our work is going to have to be in conversations, we're really going to have to start talking about how we develop thoughts and arguments and perspectives and move away from this, like, if I can scream louder than you, that means I was right. Or if I can clap back better than you, that means I was right. So there's a bunch of people out here who's witty as hell. And can sit there and clap back on your ass. Like, that's
but yeah, but then
great.
When you actually get them into a conversation, then they're...
If I hit you with a rhyme, I win. If the glove does not fit, you must acquit. Thank you, I win.
No, that's a rhyme. I bullshit you not. They teach that in law school. They sit there and tell you, like, hey, fam, like, Johnny Cochran, like, shut the whole game down with that shit. They like, look, when you're doing your closing arguments, and when you're introducing your shit, like, you can throw a little rhyme in that. Like, you do a little rhyme in that motherfucker, you know what I'm saying? Do a little smooth that everybody can remember.
This is a great, actually, connective tissue about what you do on both sides of your life. You know, the notion of having to create arguments, but also the notion of being a signed rapper, quote unquote, right? But the power, and this goes back to the churches, this goes back to, like, our history in this country and the roots of the culture, is that rhyming words feel like they fit because they rhyme. In the fact that this word rhymes with this rhyme, or this thought rhymes with this thought, that those thoughts then must be connected.
Well, that's the human evolution to recognize a pattern.
Like, right, and so that being said, if I can make two ideas rhyme, you're actually going to fill in all of the blanks and go, well, since it rhymes, it must fit. These things fit together. So I can give you any kind of rhetorical bullshit that I can come up with.
Facts.
But as long as I'm making it rhyme, you're like, but that's what I remember. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. That's all I need to remember. You know
what I'm
saying?
Stitches might break my bones. The verse will never hurt me. Like,
right.
I just called you a bitch and you cried.
Right.
Somebody's hurt. Right.
So, all right, let's wrap this up.
But just to, like, kind of add on to that, though, the other part of that is also, like, this space of, like, trying to make really complex things consumable. But it's like, guys, some things aren't simple.
Yeah. Right.
That's, like, just flat out, it's not simple. Like, I sit there and I try to talk to people about these kind of topics, and they want them to be like, so all police officers just fuck all of them. That's a little bit deeper than that.
Right, like, give me the headline.
You know, yeah. Or, like, you know, or politics.
Yeah,
like, or politics. People are like, oh man, well, this is obviously what's fucked up with all of it. Fuck all of that. Like, complicated.
Right.
It's not a majority of the time, you're not going to get you a straight, like, simple answer type shit.
24-hour news growing into social media has made everyone react, pass judgment, live off of sound bites.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sound bites evolved into memes. People are looking for that snapshot,
tickers,
of a certain thing.
Kind of
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, and then that allows people to feel much more informed than they actually are. It's like, oh, well, I saw this.
I didn't bother to go through. I did my research.
Exactly. Nobody reads the articles anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't check the headline, but they don't read the
memes
articles.
The meme said this, so that means my research is done.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's mean, it's done.
It made me laugh, so it must be right.
According to memes, White Girls is the greatest movie of all time. So that's how seriously you could take your memes. You know what I mean? But and that's the problem, and that's where you're absolutely right. These conversations are important, because when you can actually sit down and engage somebody and more than a soundbite and actually have a conversation and make them look at things from another side, that's just as powerful in my mind as having someone sit down and watch 4 hours of that. or having people necessarily go and, like you say, go to the poetry slam and like didn't get to hear about this trauma. Try and internalize it, and then of course try and humanize it and match it with the trauma that they've gone through. Like actually sit down and have that conversation. Look into that person's eyes.
Right.
See how they really feel about something. See how they can really teach you about something that's outside of your bubble.
So let me say this. Look y'all in your eyes, and I want to say thank you so much for sitting down today and creating this kind of safe space. And shout out to everybody out there who are creating safe spaces for people that look like us to grow and to share these things and to process these things. Obviously, this conversation is not done. It is always ongoing, and the healing is always...
I actually want to continue this conversation with Black.
I think that'd be great.
I think that'd be amazing.
We'll put the call out.
Because, yeah, because, we can get Farrakhan back in here.
Oh, of course. She's always down there.
Because I will say the part of the movie that made me like cry the hardest was like the Corey White scene when he first gets when they first tell him that he's guilty.
Yeah.
And like he screams out "Mama."
Yeah.
And like
yeah,
it was like just that moment of like, in your space of like your darkest moment where you feel the most helpless, your only safe refuge is your mother,
yeah,
and you have no access to her. Like they literally just grab him and he's like, "Screw mama." Like,
yeah.
And then the rest of his time in prison is like hardly being able to see his mother. And this whole time he's like, "Mama, please, like how can I transfer prison so I can move closer to my mother,
yeah. Yeah.
So she can come visit me." Like, she is my refuge type shit. And like, and I did kind of want to touch on like, just had like unpack it a little bit, because the Corey White situation is extremely interesting to me, just because of like how much importance we put on like being connected with people you see as brothers, or like, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, ride or die type shit. And how Corey White's situation really was, the police officers weren't really looking for him. He wasn't on the list of names that they were looking for.
Right.
He was literally just in a situation where his friend Yusuf was one of those names, and he was with him.
Right.
And
he didn't want him to feel alone.
The police officer goes, "Hey, like, do you want to go downtown with your boy?" He's like, "Well, if anything happens to you, your mother will kill me."
Yeah.
So he's literally down there just to support his boy.
Yeah.
He's like, "Yo, I want to make sure my brother's keeper type shit. Like, I gotta sit here and make sure that you're okay, because I know if I go ahead and come home
without you, there's hell for me to pay." Yeah.
Your mama gonna be like, "Where the fuck is Yusuf?" type shit.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks.
Yeah, kind of put this together. We got some stuff coming up, but we can definitely like put this together and kind of have a part two.
Yeah.
And
I think I can self-medicate myself enough to actually sit through this. I can come back with a little bit different,
some different perspective.
I watched it on Thursday. I say watch it on Thursday, but Friday might be a little rough. But like,
I still gotta go work. You know what? Maybe I'll watch it on a Friday when Sam has to work Saturday after, because then I have that extra time where I don't have to look at her like, "Look what y'all did to me."
She like this dude to make me like, be checking the white people in my life. But that's a whole other situation. That's my own shit.
No, that's my shit too. Self-awareness, bro. Be aware, bro. If you can't handle watching that kind of shit, don't do it.
Exactly. I'm not setting myself up.
If you know how you're gonna react to it,
don't do it.
Yeah.
Bro, I still got bills. There's nothing wrong with it. Don't do it. Bro. It's okay to say no and
find your remedies.
And protect yourself.
Yeah.
You know, guard that. There's nothing wrong with that. But of course, thank you for listening always.
Don't forget to leave us a message if you got more to say about it.
Yeah, you can leave us a voice message, drop a comment on Facebook or on Twitter. This is of course brought to you with generous help from our sponsors, Android BSM, Power Up,
and Susie Sweet Treats. Secret ingredient is love,
not cocaine. See, that's how a catchphrase works.
Yeah, so we'll catch y'all next week. Same black time,
same black channel.
All right, peace.